Unemployment benefits expire. Should Congress extend them again?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to the Morning Open. I'm Bill Radke. Democrats want to keep jobless benefits going. Republicans say not without spending cuts to pay for them. That's just ahead. But first, stocks have just started trading. So where's Wall Street? The Dow got so close to 11,000 yesterday, it's backing away a little now, down 28 points at 10,945. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are both off about a quarter of a percent. European shares are flat now, and Asian stocks were mixed today, mostly higher. Let's introduce financial analyst Julie Nieman from Smith Moore & Company. She joins us live from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Bill.
Democrats want to extend unemployment benefits, but has our economy started to recover to the point where we ought to be paying for these benefits as we go instead of adding them to the deficit?
Well, right now the economy is recovering. We have two quarters of growth right here, only because of the benefits that are coming out of the government, only because of the stimulus. The whole question is, are we strong enough to sit up and grow on our own? At this point, we're really not. This whole jobs figure that we got, 162,000 new jobs, well, every month we add 125,000 new people coming into the job market. So all we're doing is managing to hold somewhat steady here. Unemployment is still 9.7%.
Well, are you not just as worried, though, Julie, about the government debt we're saddling our beautiful, perfect children with?
That is a problem, you know, but government funding right now, interest rates are ticking up to reflect that, but we're still able to sell the debt. Now, the projected interest burden off of this is 4% of gross domestic product. That's the same as it was in the Clinton administration. And if we get a combination of rising revenues, tax cuts coming off that were put in the Bush administration, and personal and business incomes growing, which will happen with recovery, we can grow our way out of this.
So some optimism from you there, but you're not as upbeat as some of those economists were last week about our job situation, huh?
It's a question of timing, and we still are not to the point where we're creating net new jobs. Businesses have no incentive to get out there and start hiring at this point yet because they're seeing some revenue growth without adding new labor. That means their profit margins are very good, and they don't want to add new people until they really see a big surge in demand.
Okay. Julie Nieman of Smith Moore & Company, thanks a lot.
You bet.
So Julie was talking about the job market being precarious. You know, there are some cities in this country where they're dealing with the worst of unemployment and the worst of the housing bust at the same time. There's a new report on that predicament today from the Urban Institute. Reporter Brett Neely tells us now about cities that are in double trouble.
Some American cities have high unemployment or falling house prices, but double trouble cities have both, says American University economist Bob Lerman.
They average 28% decline in home prices and a 7% decline in employment.
Every major city in Florida and most in California are on the list. There, construction and real estate jobs disappeared when the housing bubble burst. But in places like Michigan and Ohio, factories closed. Workers willing to migrate can't sell their houses. Lerman says the government's cookie-cutter foreclosure programs don't cut it.
The strategies on housing are independent of whether the declines took place in the aftermath of very big run-ups in prices or whether the declines are part of a longer-term trend.
He says policymakers should offer customized help. Otherwise, recovery will be slow. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, April 6th at Marketplace.org. Some healthcare reformers have argued that computers could prevent hundreds of accidental deaths a year that are caused by wrongly prescribed drugs. But a study published in today's Journal of Health Affairs suggests technology isn't enough. From our health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Marketplace's Gregory Warner reports.
Here's one way that technology is supposed to help hospitals. Doctors type a prescription onto a computer. The computer cross-checks it with the patient's information and alerts the doctor to red flags.
Let's say it's a medication to which the patient has a known allergy.
Jane Metzger is a researcher at the healthcare consulting firm CSC. She ran tests with 62 hospitals that use software like this. Some hospital computers flagged the errors. Others, though, caught barely 10%.
The variability on the scores is really extraordinary.
David Bates is chief of internal medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital at Harvard. He co-authored the study on computerized prescribing safety, which came out today in the journal Health Affairs. He says it's not that low-scoring hospitals need more tech geeks.
It's really a matter of having nurses and doctors work with the tech geeks so that the right clinical knowledge is put in place.
The White House has offered some $36 billion in incentives for hospitals to modernize by 2014. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
When we talk about international wildlife trafficking, we usually picture exotic species being smuggled into the U.S., elephant tusks and tiger pelts. Author Craig Welch tells the story of the large and violent poaching industry in this country. His book is called Shell Games. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Bill.
Run down a few of the creatures that get poached in America.
Everything from clams in Puget Sound to Venus flytraps in the southeast to black bear gallbladders, the eggs of sturgeon that come up and down the Sacramento River, you name it.
And get passed off as beluga caviar.
It get passed off as beluga caviar.
How did you get interested in wildlife poaching and smuggling?
Well, I had written a story for the Seattle Times several years ago where several people had been arrested for poaching large clams out of Puget Sound.
These would be the gooey ducks.
The gooey ducks, exactly. And I understood that the clams were being poached for sale in Asia, and I found that completely fascinating.
And by the way, if you've never seen one, folks, it's a large burrowing clam.
These clams can grow to 3 feet in length, and they're really unlike anything you've ever seen.
How big a market is this?
You know, there are no numbers that anybody can count on, but everybody who knows anything about this world says it's been growing exponentially in the last 30 years or so. Just like everything else, with globalization, it made it easier for people to find markets overseas.
Tell us the story that opened your eyes the most.
Well, I'd say it would have to be the hitman story. There was a federal undercover informant who was being wired up to have conversations with other folks who were stealing clams, and somebody had actually told him that he was planning on blowing up a rival in his truck. And they did eventually have to go and arrest the guy who tried to hire their informant as a hitman.
Why did you zero in on gooey ducks and seafood?
Gooey ducks actually end up being a strangely perfect metaphor for how the global marketplace has changed. Before the 1970s, there was really no commercial market for gooey ducks. Plus, the largest market for gooey ducks is China, and China's influence on the global black market for wildlife is amazingly large.
Craig Welch is an environmental reporter for the Seattle Times and the author of Shell Games, Rogues, Smugglers, and the Hunt for Nature's Bounty. Craig, thank you.
Thank you.
The Department of Transportation is slapping Toyota with a record $16 million fine for not being more forthcoming about its massive sticky gas pedal recall. From New York, Marketplace's Amy Scott reports the automaker has some deciding to do.
Transportation officials say Toyota waited at least 4 months to report problems with sticky accelerator pedals. Such disclosures are supposed to happen within 5 business days. Toyota now has to decide whether to pay the fine or fight it. Hans Greimel is Asia editor for Automotive News. He says next to the $2 billion the recalls are costing the company, the proposed fine looks pretty small.
I don't think the $16 million is going to make a big dent in their balance sheet. But anytime you pay a record fine, it doesn't look good.
On the other hand, Greimel says fighting the U.S. government could drag out Toyota's problems. Regulators are investigating other safety issues that could lead to more fines. Despite all this, Toyota's business is holding up. Thanks to incentives like 0% financing, U.S. sales jumped more than 40% last month. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Did you see the Duke-Butler men's college basketball championship last night? Duke pulled the thing out in a squeaker. For some of the players on those and other teams, well, they're just squeaking by. A bill being introduced in California hopes to address the problem, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Almost went in, and Duke is the king of the dance, 2010.
March Madness is over, and all those student athletes will be back to lectures, study hall, and paying the bills. Even those on full scholarship, says Ramogi Huma. He's president of the National College Players Association and a former linebacker at UCLA.
You get a meal card and you get your housing taken care of, but for all the other expenses, you have no money at all.
In many cases, that includes cross-country travel to and from school and health insurance. A study by HUMA's organization found the average Division I scholarship athlete spends more than $2,700 a year out of pocket.
I know a lot of regular students have much more debt than that, but in terms of athletes and what they're promised, if you were facing thousands of dollars in expenses that you had no idea were coming, it would be a definite hardship.
Let's have it upfront and clear and that the promises made are kept.
Tom Torlakson has been a high school track coach. Now he's a California state legislator. His new bill would require recruiters to disclose in writing what a full scholarship does and doesn't include, and what happens if the athlete gets sidelined.
For instance, they got injured. Are their medical expenses covered? Sometimes not. Are they allowed to continue if they're injured so severely that they have to miss a season? Does the scholarship, full ride, tuition, textbooks, room and board continue or not?
A spokesman for the NCAA said legislation isn't needed because most recruiters are upfront about scholarship terms when they try to woo high school athletes and their families. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Safety officials have not yet decided what caused yesterday's fatal coal mine explosion in Raleigh County, West Virginia. At least 25 people have died there. The editor of Mine Safety and Health News, Ellen Smith, says besides the human loss, this disaster could also affect the coal industry.
It certainly isn't going to help the coal advocates. People just won't allow it to happen. They're not accepting of mine fatalities in order to turn their lights on.
In other news, the British Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, today launched his campaign for re-election. The vote's going to take place in 1 month, May 6th. And just as here in the United States, the economy is issue number one. From London, Marketplace's Europe correspondent, Stephen Beard, is with us live. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Bill.
How will the economy play into the election over there?
Well, especially one issue in particular, which will be a familiar one in the U.S., deficit cutting versus stimulating the economy.
Mm-hmm.
The Conservative opposition here wants to start reducing Britain's budget deficit now. It's more than 11% of GDP, while the Labour government under Gordon Brown says it's too early to start making deep cuts in public spending. That would threaten the UK's fragile economic recovery.
So with this going on, how closely are investors watching the campaign?
Very closely, and in fact, they're already sending a pretty clear signal. They want the Conservative opposition to win. Here's David Buick of the BGC Brokers.
It's generally felt that the Conservatives will deal with a budget deficit which is horrendous, more aggressively than Labour will. But in the same breath, they understand business, and therefore they will not allow tax that could damage business.
So much for the markets, Stephen. What about the voters?
Well, they seem much less decided. The opinion polls suggest this could be a very close election indeed, with no one party winning absolute control of Parliament. Now, investors would hate that, the uncertainty of it, so UK markets could be in for a nerve-wracking 4 weeks in the run-up to the election.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Bill.
And finally, maybe the economy is coming back. Witness this hit YouTube video in which a Pittsburgh high school student buys an iPad for about $500, takes it out of the box, grabs an aluminum baseball bat, and
hit it.
I bought an iPad.
250,000 views on YouTube. Is this anti-Apple performance art? Commentary on commercialism? No. The guy told the LA Times it was just something to do. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
A lot of people spend a lot of money on things like skincare, fast fashion, and even surgery, all in the name of self-improvement. But as the price of perfection rises, when is it time to call it quits? I'm Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable, a podcast from Marketplace. This season, we dig deep into the financial trappings of self-care and the real motivations behind our spending choices. Listen to This Is Uncomfortable wherever you get your podcasts.